And to reinforce what I've been saying so far, and to give people an idea of how meditation works, some years ago I developed a symbol of the lotus and opening up the thousand petal lotus. It's a great Buddhist symbol of a lotus because those of you from Sri Lanka, lotuses are everywhere. You see them closed up at night time. And in the early morning, when the sun rises and the light and the warmth of the sun hits the outermost petals of the lotus, that causes the lotus to open up. So first of all, the first light, the first warmth opens up this very coarse outermost layer of petals. They open up to reveal the next layer of petals inside the lotus, so that can receive the light and warmth of the sun. And that means that can open up to seeing the next layer of petals, so that can receive the light and warmth of the sun. That's how a lotus opens up, stage by stage, all caused by the light and the warmth of the sun. Now, in this simile, the lotus stands for your body and mind. You're opening it up, going deep inside. The light of the sun stands for mindfulness, and the warmth stands for kindness. Those two, the combination of awareness and kindness, is what opens up the lotus, opens up your mind. So as I've been speaking so far, you sit down, you're aware and kind to your body, which means the body relaxes until it's no longer a problem. It disappears, so you can go inside your body to your mental world. And then you're kind and aware of all the stuff in the past and the future. You're kind and aware of that, so you go right inside time. Time, like the petals, opens up, so you go to its center, which is the present moment. You just stay in the present moment. You can be aware of the present moment, but if you're not kind to it, you start thinking about things, you go somewhere else. I mentioned in one of the interviews, I had a great good fortune of seeing one of the great Thai monks. Not all the Thai monks, they say, are enlightened, most aren't. But I remember going to see one who actually was, a real arahat. And as soon as I walked and sat down into his presence, all the questions I had vanished. And I felt so at peace, because I realized this monk had incredible kindness, more than I've ever felt before. I went very still, and I never wanted to move from my seat. So I'm going to sit here and die. I don't want to move. I'm going to stay here for the rest of my life. That's what happens when you have such kindness and acceptance. You don't move. You don't want to. You're still. The power of kindness is incredible. So you're kind to this present moment. Really open the door of your heart to it. Stop trying to fix it. Do things with it. To accept this moment, no matter who you are, no matter what you are, no matter what you're doing, the door of my heart is open to you, present moment. It's called unconditional mindfulness with kindness. And that means you stay in this present moment. For those of you who are trying what I've been teaching so far, you've been thinking about this and thinking about that, the reason is because you haven't had enough kindness. And it's incredible that people think they're kind. They think they know what compassion is. You don't. All those assumptions is the reason why we don't succeed in meditation, why we don't get enlightened. We think we know, but we don't. So when you develop that kindness and that mindfulness, the warmth and the light of mindfulness and kindness opens up even the present moment. And right inside the center of the present moment, opening up. You know what you experience there? Silent mind. You don't even give things a name. in the very center of the present moment. You haven't got time to describe things. To describe things, to think about them, you need a past to describe. In the present moment, there's no past, there's no future. Actually, there's no time. It vanishes. First the body vanishes, then time vanishes. Which is wonderful. At last you're free of appointments, of wondering how long you're sitting. That needs perceptions of future and past to have time. So you just go right into the center of the present moment. It happens naturally. You don't do it. All your job is to make sure you have kindness and awareness. Basically, just do nothing. And then, actually, you're stopping things. Somebody told me that, because I travel a lot in aircraft, these days, technology is such that in a few years' time, you won't have pilots in the cockpit. It'll be all automatic, maybe controlled by some ground station, like a drone. But they still, they say, will have a person in the cockpit just in case, and a dog. That will be the flight crew. And the purpose of the guy in the cockpit is to feed the dog. And the purpose of the dog is to bite the man if he touches something. And that is the future of aircraft. And I like that because that's totally exactly what you do in meditation. I'm going to somehow get a dog inside your mind which bites you if you do anything. If you mess around and get involved in this meditation. So you don't see nothing, just aware and kind. Then you go into this beautiful silence. You can't force silence. You can't will silence. Kindness and mindfulness allow silence to blossom forth. And you're just silent. Don't give things a name. A little example. What's this which I'm holding up? What is it? What else? What else can you tell me about this? What else? What else? What else? That's all names and labels. When you stop giving this a name, then you can start seeing it. It's not a cup. That's only one function of it. It's not white. It's not heavy. It's not cylindrical. That's only little aspects of it. It's far more than that. All the names stop you seeing the truth. You say cut, you think you know, and you're finished with it. So trouble is thinking. Thinking promises to tell you the truth, but it lies. It misses the essence. It just gives things names and thinks it knows. So when you go into the silence, then you start to become wise. All wisdom comes from silence, never from thinking. So, you get this beautiful silence. Have ever you gone to silent places in the world? You know, I know Australians, you go a little bit out of the cities, there's no one there. I'm sure that's the same in Canada. And you go away from all of the villages and towns, into the wilderness areas. And you can sit down, and there's no one. For hundreds of miles around you. At night time, nothing moves. Silence. It's beautiful. There's something about going in a deep cave where you can't hear any noise from outside, which just really resonates with the silence of the mind. In days gone by, you go in great cathedrals in Europe and it'll be silent and you can sit in there. And all the problems of your life in the world would just vanish. They would just get smothered by the silence. So much so that you couldn't think. that you would resonate and also become silent, to fit into all the silence around you. It is why people go into the wilderness areas, go into, let's say, the bush in Australia. They go there and there's a spiritual awakening there. Silence around you soaks into you, and you too become. What happens in the center of the present moment? Silence. What do you do next? That idea, what do I do next? That is, alarm bells should ring, red flags should come up. That is the reason why we don't develop meditation. Ideas like, what do I do next? There is no next. Now is the only time. What do I do? Nothing. Stop doing things all the time. That's a problem. You're just great doers. And you're very good at doing things. But we've got how to stop doing and just be. And allow this present moment just to open up like a lotus. Silence. And that opens up. In the middle of the silence. That is where you experience the breathing. Is there anything moving now? This is the natural progression of opening up the lotus. So I never go looking for my breath. I just let go, and after a few minutes, there's all that's left. Just the breath. But it's in the middle of the silence. And the silence is in the middle of the present moment. And the present moment is in the middle of my body. And I'm going right inside. I'm right inside the breath. And it's silent. You don't go saying, breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. That's just too much disturbance. And there's no just, what am I going to do next? Because you're right in the present moment. Just watching the breath. And then the breath is always very delightful. From the very beginning. If I go looking for the breath, I'm disturbing it. Have you ever noticed you breathe in very, very well when you're not paying attention to it? But as soon as you start paying attention to your breath, you find it's uncomfortable. You've got interfered with it again. Just try this way and you find the breath is always very nice. Because of that, you can stay with it. And then you're just watching the breath. And then that opens up. And in the middle of the breath is what we call the delightful breath. The deeper you go into the lotus, the more fragrant and beautiful and subtle are the petals. This delightful breath. You know you've got the delightful breath when you sit there as happy as could be and you don't want to come out. And that delightful breath, if you say, what should I do next, it can't be the delightful breath. Delightful breath satisfies you. You don't want anything. You're having a great time. Who wants anything when you have this beautiful breath going in and going out? Oh, I can be here forever. So you stay with it. Mindful, kind. And then the delightful breath opens up. And right in the middle of the delightful breath is this beautiful light, the nimitta. Sometimes, if you follow these instructions, and I'm giving these instructions now because I can't come all the time, and so I give you a lot of information until the next time I come, and in the middle of the delightful breath, there's this beautiful light. Sometimes, you're still aware of the breath, and you see the light, what should I do? Nothing! Don't do things! Just let go and allow the lotus to open up naturally. If it's the right time, the breath will vanish as you go deep into this beautiful light. If it's not the right time, the lotus petals will close up. So all you go back to the delightful breath. But who cares? The delightful breath is enough. And then it opens up. And if it does, it's a beautiful, powerful light into the nimitta. What do you do when you get a nimitta? I say this because so many of my students, I must be a terrible teacher because they do everything right to get the nimitta. Once they get to the nimitta, they stuff up time and time again. What do? They've got nimitta, now they want to control it. I've got the nimitta. Leave it alone, for goodness sake.
You don't do anything.
You're just kind and aware. Nothing else. Awareness and kindness. Mindfulness, compassion. Kindfulness. And that's where the nimitta just settles down and starts bursting with energy. That's where you go to the jhanas. And for those of you who keep asking, what is a jhana? In a jhana, you can't feel your body, you can't hear, you can't see, smell, touch, you can't think. You are still. If you have the thought, am I in jhana? It can't be. You can't think. You cannot ask, wow, that was amazing. And sometimes the afterglow, the intensity of the afterglow is a great sign that, you know, you've got something. And the reason why we do these things, getting into the jhanas, are very quick. What's this got to do with becoming enlightened with insight? And it's a simile of the tadpole and the frog. I told one person that already. Once a little tadpole was born in a lake in the West End Temple, round the back somewhere. Have you got any lakes? Any gardens?
Yeah.
Have you? Round the back, here you go. A little tadpole was born there. And it was a very smart little tadpole, and it could hear the monks teaching the Dhamma. And the Abhidharma, it learns about the Abhidharma of water. And in the little, because of the Canadian government, they even had a little school in the pond. So all the tadpoles could learn chemistry and realize the water was H2O. So this little tadpole learned all about water. Do you think the tadpole can understand what water was? He could understand water as much as a fish could understand water. It's always been there, surrounded by it from the very beginning of his life. So you can't understand what's always been there. But one day a little tadpole grows into a frog. She doesn't know what she's doing, but she just jumps and she's out of the lake on dry land. And that's the weirdest, strangest experience. So much so that many little tadpoles are afraid of jumping out of the water, just the same as a prisoner is afraid of going out of jail. But it does it. It realizes something is missing. Water. And for the first time, the frog, formerly tadpole, can understand what water is. That strange stuff, which is now in your first jhana, your body has vanished. The five senses have gone. For the first time, you can understand what this body and senses are. You haven't got a clue, not even if you're a student of neuroscience in McGill University. How can you? Those five senses of body have been with you the time you were born. But when they vanish, now you can understand what this body is. That's called insight. As the jhanas develop, in the middle of the first jhana, the lotus opens. And the second jhana, right inside the first, in the middle of it. Even in jhanas, you don't go on from one thing to another thing. You go in, further in to where you already are. That's a whole path of meditation. Always going in to this moment. You don't do anything, you don't go anywhere, you don't change anything. Stay where you are and let the mind just go into the center. And the center of the center, and the center of the center of the center. That's the path of meditation. So you go into the center of the first jhana, and that's the second jhana. And the thing which is missing there, the thing which you really thought you understood, is your will, your choice. The person who chose to come on this retreat, that's gone, vanished, weird, but you experience it. Now, for the first time, you can understand what is in control of your life. Now that is a huge insight. That is usually enough of a kick that Sotapanna happens. You've seen this now in here. But you can't do that by thought. You can't do that by study. You can't do that by listening to monks like me. You just got to get out of your lake, become a frog, and experience this weird stuff of the jhanas, where things have vanished. You know what the word for vanishing is? Things which have always been there and suddenly disappear. That is anicca. Not rise and fall. Anyone can do rise and fall. Anicca is something which was nicca, permanent, always there, suddenly disappearing. Things which aren't supposed to disappear now have gone. Now you know what they are. And then the next thing which disappears is the one who knows. Who's listening to this? Who is hearing all of this? Imagine that vanishing. Ooh. That is spooky. But then you realize who this consciousness is. Nothing. No one. Gone. That's how you become enlightened. And quite frankly, you can't get enlightened without those jhanas. No way can a tadpole understand water. And that's why I teach this. And you can get jhanas, you will get jhanas eventually, and you will become stream winners, you will become enlightened. I'm sorry, it's too late. So that's what happens. So that's what we do. That's why I teach like this. Imagine I teach you to strive. Okay, focus on the breath. Come on. And I, like a Zen master, came behind you with a big stick. And if you nodded, and if you talked, like many of you have, whack. What would that do? What would be the effect of that? They'll be teaching you, I control, you control. And what happens with control is this choice, this sense of self gets stronger and stronger and stronger. Control freaks have big egos. When you let go, your ego vanishes. You're not there anymore. Bye bye me. So that's why I teach like this. So you can see and experience not self. Only when you start letting go from the very beginning. And lotus opens up to such an easy, wonderful, beautiful path. If you don't believe that, last thing before I let you meditate, Ajahn Chah's great simile. He would say the first year, this is a story which is in the latest book of the Don't Worry, Be Grumpy. It doesn't really belong there in that book, but I needed to put it somewhere because I want to share this story. I don't know why no one else has put this story out. He said his monastery was a mango orchard. He said those trees were planted by the Buddha. This was weird. And he said, these days, because of the wisdom and compassion of the Buddha, you do not need to climb the tree to get a mango. You do not need to shake the tree to get a mango. You don't throw things up onto the tree to get the mangoes to fall. If you do any one of those, mangoes won't fall. All you need to do, if you want a mango, sit under the tree perfectly still. Perfectly still. Open up your hand and the mango will fall. I rejected that as being the most stupidest anecdote, metaphor I'd ever heard. But because it came from such a great teacher, I remembered it. And later on in your life, when you experience that, you realize what a powerful simile that is. That tells you how it happens. You shake meditation. You try to make it happen. You climb the Bodhi tree. You get no wisdom at all. You sit under the Bodhi tree, perfectly still. Perfectly still, don't move at all. Open up your heart. Jhanas, Soan, Anagami, Arahant, they just fall into your hand. Just like that, you don't do anything. Except be still. That is how it happens. That is why I teach, as I teach. So remember that, and you'll find meditation is the easiest thing in the world. Really scary. Because you're letting go of something which you've been attached to for lifetimes, your will and your sense of self. But it happens, and you have a nice thing, you have a beautiful, blissful time. And you realize meditation is not hard, but you know how to let go. And then you have a brilliant time in life. Okay, so there we go. Pretty easy stuff. So let's just open up our lotuses.